Okay, this is one of the hours you've been waiting for. Your phone calls where you get to interact with us. Joe Bullitt, our guest, as we talk about Edlead Skolin's Coral Castle and anti-gravity devices. I'm getting emails like crazy about the Captain Bruce Cathy, who spotted a UFO way back, and then he found out that these things operated with an anti-gravity propulsion system. So we'll take your calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Joe, how did Edlead Skolin die? Where did he die? Did he die at Coral Castle?
No, actually, George, 3 days before his death, which would have been about December the 4th, I think Ed was tired. He had not been eating correctly, and he put a sign out on the castle, and he said, going to hospital. Put that on the front door, got on his bicycle, and rode down to the local bus station. He picked up a bus.
All by himself.
Went to Miami to Jackson Memorial. When he got in there, the doctors looked at him and said, "My God, you're suffering from malnutrition." And Ed went into a coma on the second day.
Was he a diabetic?
No, he was not diabetic, but he had just not eaten. And I think he was tired, George. He was 64 years old. He had done all he wanted to. He'd accomplished everything.
That's not old.
Well, for him in that time, you know, Ed was, if you look at his body, I mean, he was really, I don't know if it was just working with the coral or in the hot sun down there, but Ed really looked, he looked 90. If you look at his hands, and gosh, there's a picture, and I meant to send it to you, and I forgot, but his hands were, George, they were extremely long for his body, and they looked almost like fingers like Frankenstein would have.
Like an E.T.
they really do. People have called me and said, "What is the deal? If you ever see his hands," they said, "What is it?" And I said, "I don't know. It must have been the rough coral." But he rallied on the second day, and they thought he was going to come out of the coma. But on the third day, he died in his coma.
He knew he was going, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He told Mr. Bullard one day. Mr. Bullard saw him about 3 or 4 days before he died. He just said, "JT, I'm tired. I'm ready to go."
Yeah. Ready to go. Let's take some calls. I'm ready for that. West of the Rockies, Mike in Butte, Montana. You're up with us first. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, my pleasure.
Hey, Joe. In that book, his magnetic current book, he's got the secret to the universe is 7129/6105195. Have you figured anything out on that?
Mike, I never have. Excuse me. I have studied that and studied it. But I really have not come up with anything that I can say I have a definite feel for it. There's a lot of speculation that, you know, it's the mathematical equations of the universe and different ideas. But I can't say with any confidence that I've ever found anything on it. I've actually seen that number. It's inside the door panel there, and it's actually, it looks like he took a fine pencil and carved it in there in the concrete and coral there. But as far as deciphering it, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I don't have a clue.
Yeah, me neither. Well, and one other thing I wanted to ask you while I got you is, do you think he used, I know here when they quarry rock here, they used to drill a little hole and then fill it full of water and then let it sit overnight and the ice would fracture the rock nice and even. Is that a possibility that he used that kind of a method for cutting rock?
Of course it's a possibility, Mike, but the trouble with that theory is when you go down there and look at these stones, they look like someone has cut them with a laser beam. And to me, it's hard to figure out how he would do that crack and make it, I mean, with, it looks like you know, when you're building something with a plumb liner and you pop the chalk line and you cut that line and it's perfect. These stones are cut with such precision, I don't think that could be possible.
Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Truly a great mystery, Joe. No question about it.
Evidently.
I mean, when I first heard about it, I couldn't imagine it. And then Richard C. Hoagland went down there. He noticed some strange anomalies with his readings. And then your book came out. It's a great story.
It really is. There's nothing like it on this earth, George, and we have it here. We have it in the United States, and we're not taking advantage of it.
By the way, I'm getting emails about Captain Bruce Cathy's book. Is that still available?
No, it's out. It has been out of print for many, many years. I was just very fortunate that I had a friend in, and I'm sorry, I think I said he was in Australia. I mean, he's in New Zealand.
He's in New Zealand, too.
He was able to get me a copy for you and a copy for me. You can probably go on a used bookstore somewhere. They're very expensive.
All right, let's go to St. Cloud, Florida. Chuck's with us east of the Rockies. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, sir. How are you? It's a pleasure to speak with both of you.
Thank you.
I have a lot in common with both of you. I spent most of my adult life in the radio broadcast business.
You have that voice.
worked at it. Mr. Bullard, you too.
Thank
my
you.
Mom was one of the original tour guides and lecturers at Coral Castle.
Wow, oh, what's her
cool.
name?
Dot Lamont.
I think, yes, I remember that name. Yes, she's on the video.
Could be, and I'm not sure. I've been to both locations, and it's very unique. And, George, you need to get down and take a look at it. You'd really be surprised.
Is it bizarre, Chuck, when you get down there?
It is bizarre. And his first location, he moved mainly because the neighbors were tormenting him. But a lot of laser talk was talked back then. But you have to get down and take a look at it.
Okay, I'm going to try to do that. I love Florida, and it's not too far from some of the spots I've gone to in the past. Why did the neighbors in the original location not like him? Joe?
Well, now, I've never really heard that theory. I didn't talk to anybody.
He did move, right?
Yes, he moved, but now I never interviewed anybody that didn't just love him, because he never caused any problems. He was not noisy. I never encountered anyone who said anything bad about Ed.
What was his explanation for moving, though?
Oh, well, his explanation for moving was he said that he thought there was a subdivision coming, and he did not want nosy neighbors trying to spy on him. But that subdivision was a long time in coming. We believe it was just an excuse to move the castle. We believe that it was because of the magnetic grid pattern had changed. And they also believe, George, that he could have had a surveying error, that he should have put it in Homestead first, but he had not. He got excited about Florida City location. It was a good location, but as he moved towards Homestead and found that stronger current, because he was always moving around, he didn't stay in one place,
right?
Even though he builds it in Florida City, he still travels around. He finds that location, Homestead, and he says, oh, my God, I've made a big mistake. Well, I don't want to tell people about, I know this anti-gravity secret, so I'm just going to make out like, you know, that was it. It always had a cover story for everything, George, no matter what he did. So I think that the subdivision story was a cover story.
The grid, same as ley lines? Are we talking about the same thing?
Same thing.
All right. Let's go to Miami, Florida. Clay's with us now. Hi, Clay. Go ahead.
Hey, George and Joe. How you guys doing?
Good,
hey,
Clay.
Great, Clay.
Hey, listen, let me tell you, the very first Coast show I ever heard was with you, Joe Bullard. It was about 5 or 7 years ago. It was a taped show.
That's correct.
And I called you. I talked to you over the phone, and I got a signed copy of your book.
Have you got the hard copy?
Pardon me?
The hard copy? Do you have the hard copy?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Goodness, hold on to it.
Yeah, you signed it and sent it to me. But one interesting thing I wanted to add to you, to the program, was when I went to for the first time about, is in the early 60s with my elementary school. We went there on a field trip, and he has this door in the back, this big coral rock door that probably weighed, I don't know how many tons, 10 tons, whatever. And the guide asked one of the small girls to push on that door with her finger, and when she did, that door swung open just as easily as could be.
Beautiful.
Just pressing on it with a finger. Now, that door is broken now, because since the last show, I've been back there a couple times and took my kids there to see the place. And it's just a place of awe and wonderment. You sit there and say, how could this little man have done this? Because just as you say, it doesn't look like he chopped anything with a hatchet or an axe or any kind of tool. Everything looks like it's laser cut. It's just smooth and as precise as can be.
And all those 25 rocking chairs rock on the center of their gravity.
Yes.
He also had a moon clock, didn't he?
Yes, moon dial.
Yep.
That's up on the north wall. You can't see it on the tour. They don't give it on the tour because you have to climb up on top of the wall. But it's carved in there, and it's carved in a half bowl shape. And when the moonlight hits the top of the L-shaped piece of metal, it falls on the lines at the bottom and gives you the time.
Next up, let's go to Denver, Colorado. Frederick, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hi, Joe. Hi, George.
Hey,
hi,
how are you?
Thank you. There's been numerous times while doing the dishes or in a trance, I have found myself with a cup or a bowl-shaped object and found that it gravitates towards the sink. And then it almost seems as if it's like channeling not air, but something else through it. And I was wondering if that might have something to do with what you're talking about.
Maybe he tapped into something in the atmosphere, in the universe, like they would talk about orgone. I wonder if Skolnin had this ability to, you know, tap into this energy force in the universe.
I think if anybody could, he could, because remember, George, he made this statement. He could close his eyes and chase a mosquito off the wall. Mr. Bullard said he saw him do that. And he said,
good.
How do you know that it's not coincidence? And he said, I'll do it again.
What did you find when you did your research for Waiting for Agnes as probably one of the most puzzling aspects of all of this?
The most puzzling thing?
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have to be where like your question, where did the knowledge come from? How did he get it? Where did he get it? It's just too much for one person.
That in that machine, that magnetic machine that was dismantled, I guess people took parts of it or something?
Yes, but George, a couple of years ago, some guys came in there and they were telling me about it. They actually added a few parts to it, hooked up a light bulb to it, cranked that wheel up, and that light was running.
Yeah, you see, he had some knowledge of something.
Yeah.
He really did.
And his idea, George, excuse me, his idea was to put that box, his perpetual motion holder, would go outside the home, a radio antenna would go up, catch those waves, the magnetic waves, and it would power your house.
For free.
And also power your car for free.
Brentwood, California we go. It's Wayne's turn on Coast to Coast. Wayne, thanks for calling.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
I had the pleasure of meeting Bruce Cathy in New Zealand in 1983.
What did you think?
I was by no means am I a scientist or a mathematician, but I have his harmonic series books, 33, 695, and 288, his first editions, and I treasure those books beyond belief. I'm into ufology, and his books are like Bibles to me. And the last time I spoke to him was a couple of years back, 2008. And the man is remarkable. What he's achieved in his research is just unbelievable.
So you think he's right on then?
I think I keep reading the books over and over, and I'm trying to keep them as pristine as I possibly can. These are have been out of print since the 60s and the 70s, and you can't replace them. I understand that you might want his current address and phone number, and off air, if you're one of your producers would like to get a hold of him. He's got to be 90 years old by now. And
he's 82.
He was born in 1930.
Yep. So. 82 it would be. Okay, I'm going to put you on hold. Let's get some information. I'd love to chat with the guy on the program. That would be fascinating, wouldn't it, Joe?
Oh, God. I'll be all ears.
How many different stone structures are at Coral Castle?
Oh, goodness.
I mean, they're scattered all over the place, aren't they?
Yes, they're scattered.
Did he build roofs on top of these structures, too?
No, George, it's a totally open structure. Just imagine...
He would sleep under the stars?
No. Now, originally, he built like a little shack until he could build his two-story tower. Actually, when you go into the two-story tower now, it has 16 steps leading up to it. And George, it is fantastic. It's got a square stone roof. Those stones in it weigh 6 to 9 tons. But it's a beautiful, it looks just like a modern-day apartment, if you will.
And he cooked there, he ate there. He's got a picture of a little stove, a little pot stove.
Had a little. He had a little gas stove in his quarters there, and then he also had his barbecue cooker outside. If you remember, that's where he could slide it out there. It had a fire underneath it, and it was the first cooker of its type because it had a little pipe that went up under it, and it actually steamed his food as he waited all day.
Where it's 4:25 in the morning in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Let's go to Bob. Go ahead, Bob. Thanks.
Oh, yes. I had heard somebody speaking about the Coral Castle on another program a couple of years ago, and this individual, and I'm sorry I don't remember who he is, said that the secret to the levitation process is revealed in the circle that's on the cover of the book that he wrote. And I can't do it justice, but to put it simply, he said our concept of atoms with electrons and neutrons and all that isn't quite right, and really it's more akin to the reality is it's more akin to like what you see with the DNA structure, where it relates to the numbers 3, 6, and 9, and the neutral would be in the center of the spiral, the 3 would be the positive, and the 9 would be the negative, and that creates all physical reality. And somehow, if you understand that, then when you look at the circle on Ed's book, you understand what he's telling you. Has the author heard anything about that?
Yes, that's actually Jonathan DePue's idea. And it's not actually a circle, but it's two. They look like cobras on the front. And he's calling that the flower of life. You can actually find that theory if you go to Amazon and just look on there, and it'll say Jonathan DePue's theories, and he's a genius also.
How many people are mesmerized about Edward Leeds Skaldin?
I don't know how you could not be. I do have some people who write in, tell me, and say, that's the most boring thing I've ever heard. So, it's a bunch of rocks, they tell me, you know. So, you know, George.
These are rocks, some of which are bigger than the pyramid of rocks.
But they don't look at it like that. They just say, God, your stuff is boring. Your accent is killing me. And I'll never watch your video or buy your book. So, George, when I talk to you on the phone, it's like there's a I get as enthusiastic and as passionate as when I'm at Coral Castle, because talking about it even just makes me, there's just something about it that's just energy. And I don't see how you can look into this thing. And like we're talking about it tonight, once you go down there, and I would love to have a picture with you at that 9-ton swinging gate one day, just before I die from this planet. That's my dream, okay?
We'll hang in there. Hopefully it'll be sooner than later, right?
Beautiful. But referring to the gentleman's call there.
I'm talking about the picture, not you dying.
Well, I hope the picture comes first.
Yeah, me too.
If not, load me in the casket and just go down there and, you know, shake my hand dead. That's okay with me.
Where do we pick up Waiting for Agnes? It's still a great read.
Thank you. George, you can, for people who don't like computers, I'm going to be happy to give out my phone number. Is that okay if I give it out?
Go ahead.
Okay.
It's your phone number.
I get some good calls. Area code 386-438-8512. Also, if you look on the Coast website there at Waiting for Agnes, I have two websites, but on the Waiting for Agnes site, I have my phone number on that site also.
Super, Joe. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you, and then I'll tell you what's in store on our next Coast to Coast show. Well, a long time ago in a far-off land, there was another radio host named Chuck Carter who talked about things like Area 51, EMP threats, and all kinds of stories. And we'll be talking with Chuck tomorrow as part of our program on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back in just a moment with Joe Bullard, we'll take final phone calls. Don't touch your dial. Joe Bullard, we're going to bring you on now, but we have Captain Bruce Cathy on with us for just a moment. He can't spend a lot of time with us. Captain, thank you for joining us. How are you, sir?
Not so bad. You're lucky. I was just going to bed.
We gotcha. Well, I've got Joe Bullard on. We've been talking about you and your work and some of the books that you've written.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have been calling in about you. But let me ask you two quick questions before we have to let you go. One is, when you saw this UFO, can you describe what you saw years ago?
That was the first one. That was way back, I think it was 1952, roughly 900. I belong to the local air club where the Great Auckland Airport is now, and I was on my way out there with a companion, and we saw a fairly fierce, brilliant white light just over the small harbour just by the airport there. And we knew it wasn't Venus, it was a Biscayne, so I put my foot down and got out to the airport, and there was 9 people there. And I got them all outside, and we watched it for about 20 minutes. And it was hovering stationary, and it looked like a small sort of a red light, a couple of 100 yards from it, slowly going round it. I assumed it was a big craft with the light was sort of turning round somehow, but while we were watching it, went straight down for a short time and then moved sideways again, and then flashed back and went straight up into a clear evening sky. And at that time I knew, you know, it was something strange. It wasn't anything we could produce for the speed it took off and disappeared.
That's pretty remarkable. And at what point, Bruce, did you begin to talk about this grid pattern that was on the planet?
Well, being a pilot, well, obviously from that time on, I kept my eyes open when I was flying, and I saw several. Actually, I had a whole bunch of them go underneath us one night, and it was, you know, in a really dark night. I was flying up to Auckland from Wellington, mm-hmm. in New Zealand here, and this thing was going south, and. I think there was one sighting over your way there. I think it was called the Lubbock Lights. There was a whole sort of bunch of light in
the
horizontal pattern. Well, it was similar to that. And whatever it was, if it was one object, it would have been about 3 times as big as a 747. And I created Mary Hill, actually, because I wouldn't say anything, because everybody knew what I was up to by that time, you know, looking around. And I got the cape on it to... check with the people in Wellington on the ground there.
Well, it's
out of traffic.
It's a remarkable story, the fact that you were able to see this object as a pilot. I think just adds so much credibility to it, Bruce. Look, I know you've got to go. I want to thank you for spending the brief moment with us. Joe, that's pretty fascinating, isn't it?
Oh, my God. We're speaking with a genius. This is beautiful, George. Yes, yes. Thank you, Captain Kathy, for sharing this life story with us.
Well, he saw something.
Definitely. And here's a pilot. I mean, here's somebody.
These are guys who are used to seeing objects, other planes. They could identify things when they look at the ground. He saw something very strange.
George, you don't think he saw a weather balloon up there, do you?
Yeah, right. Or a drone. I don't think we had them. Okay, let's go back to the calls here. Let's go to Green Cove Springs, Florida. Alan's with us, first-time caller. Hey, Alan, go ahead.
Hey, George. Good morning, and you, Joe.
Hey, Alan.
Such a pleasure to be here. Now, Bruce Cathy is a genius. He has discovered people have used him, the Atlantis blueprint, Colin Wilson and Fleming, used him to find pyramids in China. So this guy is a genius. I wish we had more time with him. But I wanted to ask Joe about researching coral castles. I saw a photo of a device that looked like a Rolls-Royce engine, is the best way I could describe it, and they think it was a circle of magnets. Are you familiar with that this fellow used?
That's his perpetual motion holder.
Exactly. Can you comment on that? And thank you so much for letting me in.
Okay, Alan, thank you. Now, that's the one that people stole pieces from, isn't it, Joe?
That's correct, yes. And the blueprint, George, on how to build that machine, Ed finally could not get a patent, so he got frustrated. The blueprint to build that machine is sitting in Coral Castle, and we don't build it.
Jeez, but how big is it?
It's about the size of a basic car tire, a little bigger than a car tire.
How much power do you think it generated?
George, it was not meant to generate that much power. What it was it was a model. It was a demonstrator, if you will.
Like the old prototype.
It was a prototype. What he's saying is, here's how to build it. just build a bigger one now. And this is the machine, George, that he used to talk about. This was Ed was around when the rockets were just coming in, and he told the tourists down there, he said, look, one day you'll be able to take my machine, put it in the head of a rocket. You'll leave Earth in the morning, go to Pluto for breakfast, go all around the universe, come back to dinner that night, and you'll have as much energy as when you left. Because once you put these magnets into motion, they never stop until you break the current.
By the way, Bruce Cathy doesn't sound like he's 82, does he?
Oh, he's fantastic. He looks, when you see him on TV, he's fantastic. He's still strong and got every ounce of brain power that he's ever had. He's amazing.
All right, let's go west of the Rockies. We've got Justin in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Justin. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to share two observations real quick with a question there. One,
sure,
for the planet in terms of magnetic flux, and secondly, in terms of interplanetary and interstellar. I've actually been able to see these flux lines before. They're kind of bluish, and I was up on a mountain hike, and I was able to actually kind of see like a network of these flux lines from mountain to mountain. And, you know, they look kind of similar to, you know, the flux lines as they'd be depicted coming off of a magnet, whereas, you know, the Earth's magnetic lines of flux, when you look at, like, solar observatory information from NASA or whatnot. And that was kind of strange to see that before I'd ever really started to come into this information. That was just when I was younger out on a hike. And anyway, that was kind of strange. But then in terms of the interstellar, my question and observation is that scientists are starting to recognize that when these charged particles come from the sun, they actually kind of jump on like the flux lines, almost as if they're conductors,
mm-hmm,
between the planet and the sun itself. So my question is, do you think that perhaps this is a method that could be utilized for interstellar or perhaps interplanetary travel? You know, the observation and scientific recognition of these lines, you know, in terms of these charged particles coming from the sun to the Earth are kind of, I don't know, I think that's kind of revealing in light of what you've discussed tonight.
There's a lot of energy there, Joe. If they could ever harness it, what do you think they could do with it?
It's definitely there. And the caller is reminding me very much of Bruce Cathy, because when he was studying what happened to those airplanes down in Florida, he absolutely had to find out the position of the sun every time.
Every time.
So, every time he said, where's the position of the sun? Where did they go down? Where did they lose them? So the sun position and what he's talking about there is absolutely makes sense.
To me, it sounds a little more enticing if these craft were coming from other planetary systems. How about you?
I'm not saying that they couldn't. I think, and Cathy in his book mentions, he didn't say one race of aliens. He said races.
Right.
All we're saying is that, hey, there's a group that's never left here.
Well, but they could have come here originally.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, okay.
I think they did. And I think that some of them, when the destruction of Atlantis, I think they went into all the places. They went into Egypt. That's what they did, was they were taking their technology, building it, and saying, here's what we did. You know, we died, and we're not coming back because you guys messed us up down there in Atlantis. That's why they're not talking to us now. But I think that they did stay here. They have been here for thousands of years. But, yeah, I'm like you. They could still be coming from far out. If they can jump time and they can do this interstellar travel, sure, anything's possible.
Let's take a few more calls. We'll go to Greenville, Tennessee. Albert's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Albert.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
You too, sir.
Glad to be on your show.
Thank you.
I had a few interesting thoughts while I was listening to your show. I took some classes in astronomy when I was in high school. And I always majored in black holes. Well, I always noticed that even with magnets, a planet, stars, black holes, even pulsars, there's always a polar negative and positive.
Always. Always.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, they could also use these to accelerate from one planet system to another, you know, even coming out of a planet. Our planet rotates and creates a constantly regenerating magnetic field.
That's right.
So they could use these magnetic waves that are rising out of the planet to accelerate out into space. And from there, they could use the magnetic field from, say, our sun, another planet, to hurl them across the galaxy.
Joe, is that how the grid is formed that Cathy was talking about?
he's nailed it exactly. That's it. Yes. Better put than I could put it.
This universe is a huge magnet, isn't it?
That's all it is. That's all it is. That's what Ed was saying.
Good observation, Albert. Let's go to Steve now in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Go ahead, Steven.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
A couple of quick things here. I'm local, and I've been to the Coral Castle.
What'd you think? Do you like it?
It's amazing. And the walls and the vertical walls and the quarry are laser-like cut. Just, I think you could put a T-square on it, and it would be a perfect 90-degree angle between the sides and the bottom. And when you put your eyeball along the edge of it, there's no ripple. I mean, it was exactly cut just the way Joe said, just like it was done with a laser. Now, someone down there, a friend of his, had written a book that I bought, a manual, a kind of narrative of what he did. And he goes through this whole song and dance about using levers, chisels, and hammers, et cetera, to cut and fracture these rocks loose and move them around. But I don't know. The book also said it took him a lot longer than what you might be indicating to load those blocks onto that trailer to move them from one location to 10 miles north. So I'm not sure I'd buy it, though. Another thing, just to bring something else out, is that there are some kind of records in the Miami Police Department. Ed Leeskellen was mugged, I think, at the first location.
He was mugged? Wow.
He was mugged, yeah. He was attacked. And it's in this book. Written by a friend of his, supposedly, and apparently he's beat up pretty bad, and after that, according to the book, is when he supposedly really clammed up about anything he was doing, and it seems like after, I think it was the original location, after that attack is when I believe he moved the location. Whether it had anything to do with it or not, I don't know. I think the book said something about he wanted it to be more available for people to come and visit, which is one of the reasons he moved it closer to the downtown Miami area.
You're absolutely right.
Another thing going on is he spent a lot of time riding his bicycle back and forth to the old downtown Miami Public Library, which I was at before they relocated it. And he said, if you want to know how to do what I do, go read the books I read.
That's right.
And in that book on magnetic currents, I read through that too, and that little perpetual energy machine, which is basically a magnetic loop, actually works. And according to Ed, there are no electrons and protons. The physicists are wrong. Everything is positive and negative magnets that are constantly moving in opposite directions. And he claims that the Earth, which is a big ground source, which everybody, electronics uses as a ground, is actually a source at the core of positive and negative magnets. And if I remember reading right, he was hinting that the idea was to be able to block out one or the other. On whatever you want to lift so that you'd have two negative forces which would deflect each other away.
Repel, yeah.
And that's as far as I got with understanding what it is. And one more thing, that little device down there that everybody's saying is a generator, to me, with my little bit of electronics knowledge, it looks like what could be an old-fashioned, originally made pulse timer. If you look at it, it's like 24 to 30 equally spaced vertical metal segments around the center core, and it looks to me like there will be something that spins around and makes contact with one, breaks contact, and as it spins around, keeps making and breaking contact with each of the little vertical posts. And that almost to me looked like a mechanical pulse timing device, that the faster you spin it, the more the current would go off and on, off and on. That's about all I could make.
That's
of
a great observation. What do you think about that, Joseph?
It's beautiful, because what you don't realize there is you're talking about one of the ways that George healed himself from tuberculosis was with a magnetic field, but it has to be a pulsating magnetic field.
Isn't it interesting, though, that some people will recommend that you put magnets on your body when you're not feeling well? Or if you have, like, a skin problem, you put magnets on it.
That's exactly correct. But the problem, what they don't realize is they're not really good until you pulsate them.
Yeah, and how do you pulsate, permanent magnet?
Well, I have a machine that I told you I was hurt, and I got it in Canada, and it actually, you can stick a gallon of milk in it when it's about to go sour, and it'll go for another 60 days. It changes the
really?
Clarity. Yes. Oh, yeah. It's widely used in Europe. They ban them here because, they want you to use chemotherapy for cancer and stuff. But in Europe, they use these machines. You have to go to Canada to get them.
Mobile, Iowa, Scott's turn. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, George.
Hi.
When you mentioned on the Coral Castle down there, the mysterious black box, got me thinking about that one Nat, you had the subject on 512, 721 tones, where the earth and everything's supposed to resonate.
Right, with Leonard Horowitz.
And I got to thinking, well, okay, if you were to manipulate the magnetic field, if he's on a nice ideal spot of the grid, could that possibly be it? You hit the right tone, levitate.
Yes, absolutely.
And lower it,
absolutely.
Drop it back down.
Tesla was close to that too, Joe.
Oh, yes. Yes. Remember, Tesla had the car going 90 miles an hour with the magnetic generator.
Yeah, oh, he was a genius.
Yep, 90 miles an hour.
I would have liked to have seen Lee Skolnin with Tesla.
Oh, talk about
Tesla. I wonder what they would have been talking about.
Oh, my God.
Arguing about.
Yeah. Knowing Ed would never argue. He was too laid back.
Thanks, Scott. Those are good observations, too. I think one of the things of our listeners, they're like PhDs in things, aren't they?
George, I'm sitting here going, my God, he knows more about it than I do.
I mean, they know Bruce Cathy. They know about Lee Skolnin. They know about the machines that are there. I'm impressed.
Every time I do this show, I'm like, I'm taking notes myself, you know, and I've been studying all my life.
You know, somebody was telling me, how do you know so much? And my answer was, well, I listen to the guests on the program and the callers. That's how you learn.
Right, right. And that's a great tool that most people don't use, the both ears.
Joe, would you give out your website, your phone numbers again, and all those good things?
Yes, I'd be happy to. My website again is www.waitingforagnes.net. My phone number again, area code 386-438-8512. George, could I put in a quick plug for a screenplay?
You've got 10 seconds. Do it.
Okay. Listen, we've got a screenplay. I'm working with a great producer, Charles Bender. We're looking for a home. We've got a great screenplay. If there's any movie moguls out there, give me a call, or Charles Bender in Santa Monica, and we're ready to do a movie.
All right. Joe's number again, 386-438-8512. He probably won't get any sleep tonight. Too many calls will be coming in. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, John P. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.